continuing the attack of the 5-foot women. Although it's hard to follow, Stephanie. Thank you, everybody, for being here tonight. Thank you, Chris, my wonderful New Yinzer friends, Megan, who came, and Angèle, they're my cheering section. And, of course, Joan and Jimmy for doing this wonderful series. I'm just going to read two poems tonight, but they both have Pittsburgh connections. This first one is dedicated to Scott Silsby, who's reading tonight. And it's in the latest Epicus, the journal, the wonderful journal put out by Ziggy Edwards with the help of her son, Jude Rosen. But it came out of a reading series that a bunch of us did up at the Apollo Public Library in Apollo, Pennsylvania, called Pittsburgh Rocks the Apollo. So I read with Scott and Chris and Don Wentworth, Bob Wallachy, and Renee Alberts. And the title of the series revived an old memory. So this is called Rocking the Apollo at the Stanley Theater, 1979. It wasn't James Brown, cape running with sweet sweat and swimming with stars like the Monongahela River. But Browns, please, please, please reach this burg's brothers and sisters like echoes from the Great Migration, like thunder from the God's lyre. Make music. Change your lives. It wasn't Harlem's neoclassical temple, that landmark music hall, the Apollo whose columns rise like fresh gardenias behind Billie Holiday's ear, like Mahalia Jackson's hymns to the divine, like Ella Fitzgerald's golden basket, like Louis Armstrong's legendary trumpet sounding at Heaven's Gate. It was Pittsburgh's Stanley Theater in 1979. The Stanley, once a movie palace whose 20-foot chandelier shivered crystal tears when Bill Bojangles Robinson tapped on screen with Little Shirley Temple, but chimed when he danced there live and jived with Cab Calloway and Duke Ellington. Eras shifted, rock stars supernovaed. On that stage in 1980, another god, Bob Marley, would burn with love in his last public performance, beads rising from his dreadlocks like the flares of 1,000 Zippo lighters, wailing against the cancer of our world, his redemption song. But this was 1979. Pittsburgh's own Phyllis Hyman was opening, like a flower, a red iris in a slit satin gown, for the smooth Peebo Bryson. I didn't know who they were when the music editor at the magazine where I was an intern handed me the tickets. Didn't know that my poor little college girl uniform of sweater, jeans, and Mia clogs, just like my roommates, in which we trekked the Himalayan slopes of the Syria Mosque for Bonnie Raitt, wasn't right for this evening. Not against the gleaming dresses that swirled and dipped and swooped like jazz, the slick hair spangled with blossoms, the stilettos scaling like skyscrapers, the sharkskin suits and shiny ties, the bronze and ebony brilliantine. Oh God, if you want to know the beauty of black, sink like two lumps of dough into a concert hall where the only other white face is the Elton Johnish dude tickling the ivories for Phyllis Hyman. Don't shoot the piano player. He is doing the best that he can. His grin caught the groove like our own dim reflection, while Phyllis was beautiful, a torch song glowing in the first act of her trilogy. An eon away from the day she canceled her engagement at Harlem's Apollo with one note. I'm tired. I'm tired. Those of you that I love know who you are. May God bless you. Yes, the God is creation and destruction, his eyes pitiless and blank at sundown. But in 1979, Phyllis stood radiant before the coiled crowd waiting for Peebo. When Bryson appeared, a groom in a cream tuxedo, the ladies' man, the crooner, better than wedding cake trimmed with silver roses, the hall erupted like Vesuvius. the wan bouffant teenagers who swooned like falling dominoes for Beatlemania had nothing on the ladies of all ages and sizes giving it up for Peebo, sacrificing like Vestal virgins, screaming like Maenads, bridal and funereal, lustful and divine. Later, Peebo crossed over to Disney to duet Beauty and the Beast with Celine, became the promise tinkling like music boxes in white girls' princess bedrooms. But that evening, he belonged to his people, the black and proud. And no, he wasn't James Brown, but something was liberated in me that night, rising like a small star formed by that explosion. Triumphant, despite the set faces of pale, bristling cops whose cordon sanitaire could not contain the celebration, the joy spilling down the steps of the Stanley Theater, and yes, it was enough to make me into a poet that night in Pittsburgh in the year of Apollo and the good Lord Jesus, 1979. My second and last poem is slated to appear in the next New Yinzer, Scott Silsby. I'm not trying to pick on Scott tonight, I really am not. In a radio interview with Marie Howe, after her poem, What the Living Do, made the Oxford Anthology of English Verse, she quoted something that her brother John, who died of AIDS, had said, and the poem took off from there. What John Howe said is the epigraph of this poem. What the dead do, after Marie Howe. Pain is inevitable. Suffering is a choice. John, you stayed everywhere but in your body, leaving your sister this riddling wisdom. And the virus that colonized you captured my old friend Louis, visiting in Syracuse, when he told his mother, "Don't worry, Ma, it's all right." His last words bleeding into coma. It's summer again, the clouds a soft, reflective white, and the sunlight lies on them like some screening room version of heaven. But my window's fogged up, I can't open it. For weeks now, writing bills or stumbling with numbed feet into puddles, breaking, I've been thinking, this is what the dead do for us. My hot coffee tears run and run, but I refuse to display their ropey stains like Victorian mourning jewelry, pinned pathetically to my breast. Not when you and Louis and the others went into the fathomless night like that, planning, insisting that your lives were happy. This is it. Yes, you gave up yearning, as I will learn to do when losses burn too deep. Of course we want this summer to last forever and ever. Of course we want every Hershey's kiss, melting like sweet tar, baptizing us from soul to crown. Waiting, waiting for that call, bright ring signaling an ice cream van or a lover. But there are moments, pacing, when I catch a glimpse of someone in the spotted mirror, say, like a window into isolation, and I'm gripped by wonder at the young man that you were, always will be, and I'm speechless. You are dead, but your breath fills the air. Thank you.